5. So, you know, do the math. 99.98%. So this isn't like the administration was having trouble getting things through the FISA court. But what they had to do was they had to put up the paperwork. They had to have a reason. They couldn't just spy on everybody. But that wasn't enough for the administration. As we know, they have gone beyond the FISA court, outside the boundaries of the FISA court, and done things illegally. And now what the administration wants is retroactive amnesty. Retroactive amnesty for the breaking of the law. And they're talking about it through telecom immunity, telecommunications immunity. And, of course, that's they say, you know, these poor big telephone companies. And, well, we really want them to help us, but, oh, my God, they have 40 lawsuits. Stop for a minute. 40 lawsuits? That's all? 4-0? For all the telecommunications companies? Verizon and Sprint and Quest? Well, not Quest. Quest decided to uphold the law and didn't want to help the government break the law. So when these telecommunications giants decided to help the government in violation of the law, people started suing them and said, you need a warrant. And they apparently are getting scared. Not so scared that they would actually stop helping the government. They're still doing that. But scared that they might have to pay people for breaking the law. Well, Bush couldn't have that, so he insisted that the telecommunications companies get immunity. So why can't people just sue the governments? Well, they can't sue the governments because the government, hey, that's state secrets, right? Sovereign immunity. The government is protected from lawsuit. So if you can't sue the government and you can't sue the telecommunications company and the government is getting the telecommunications company to spy on you, who can you sue? Nobody. Nobody. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. But anybody in law school will tell you that a right without a remedy is no right at all. If it's illegal for someone to steal from you, but the police refuse to help, then how is it illegal for someone to steal from you? If it's illegal for someone to assault you and you can't turn to anyone for relief, then the illegality of it all is on paper. If it's illegal for the government to spy on you and you can't go to the government and you can't go to telecommunications companies and you can't go to the courts and you can't go to Congress and you can't go to the president, then the Fourth Amendment becomes just a piece of paper, something that you could burn. So I was very shocked by Senator Webb, my senator, the senator from Virginia, voting for this bill. I was also shocked by the fact that he voted for a bill that said that this act, this revision, won't even bind the president. It's called exclusivity. And this clause says, believe it or not, that even though we're giving the president all of these rights, all of these powers, to go beyond the law, even so, well, it's not exclusive to this. Now, exclusivity, it's a big word. It's the kind of thing that people don't really know what it means. What does it mean? It means that the law doesn't bind the president. If the president isn't required to exclusively act under this legislation, it means the president can act beyond this legislation. So here you have legislation that gives the president amnesty for all his illegal actions, gives the president permanent secrecy so he never has to tell us how he broke the law, and tells the president that you have, in the future, unlimited right to break the law however you choose with regard to warrantless wiretapping. This law, in effect, takes the Fourth Amendment to the United States and sets it on fire. It burns it. It is a repeal of the Bill of Rights. So I was not happy to see my senator vote for that bill. So I called Senator Webb's office, and I spoke to a staffer there. And the guy who answered the phone, I said, I want to talk to you about the FISA amendments. And he said, I can talk to you about that. I said, well, can I speak to someone who's an expert on it? And he said, no, I can talk to you about that. I said, great. And I laid out just a small portion of what I've shared with you here. I said, why is Senator Webb voting to shred the Constitution? Specifically, why is he voting that the president has unlimited right to spy on us and voting that he has amnesty for all his illegal actions in the past? And the guy said, he gets an updated set of tools to fight terrorists. And I said, okay, what are those tools? Well, he didn't know. And I said, well, how does he feel about giving the president amnesty, which is what telecommunications immunity is? And he said, well, he's against it. I said, okay. How does he feel about exclusivity, giving the power, the president the power to act beyond the law in the future for all of future time? He said he's against it. And I said, but he voted for the bill anyway. And the guy said, yeah. And I said, why? And he couldn't answer my question. So I asked to have someone who could answer my question call me back. And he said they would try, but he couldn't promise they would do so. And I called several more times and was getting no answer. So finally, I gave a post. I used my rights as a citizen, and I posted on the blog. I posted on a local blog in Virginia called Raising Cain, RaisingCain.org, a progressive Virginia blog. And I also posted on the Daily Kos. Well, that made people unhappy. Someone in Senator Webb's office, in fact, wrote to the head of the blog in Virginia, a guy by the name of Lowell Feld, and asked Lowell to take my blog down. She said that it was unfair of me to get all this information from just a guy who answered the phone. That I had asked him whether he was a lawyer, which I had, and he had said no, and that I shouldn't have asked to get information from him. Lowell, to his credit, refused to take my blog entry down, and in fact, you can still find it under Inside Scoop, either at Daily Kos or at RaisingCain.org. But what's interesting about all of this is that this happened a month ago, and I said, fine, let me speak to a lawyer. Let me speak to a lawyer. Okay, you won't let me speak. You know, this is just a guy who answers the phones. Fine. Let me speak to someone on their staff. And in fact, I even asked to meet personally with Senator Webb. That was all 3 weeks ago. I still have no answer. In fact, I just sent an email today saying, let me confirm that Jim Webb is refusing to explain his vote, refusing to meet with me, refusing to tell the good people of Virginia why he voted for a bill that he ostensibly opposes. They sent me a form letter. The form letter explains how Jim Webb voted against an amendment that gave retroactive immunity, voted against an amendment that gave the president this power to act beyond the law. It said that he voted for an amendment that would say that telecommunications companies who act in bad faith could still be punished, which, by the way, folks, is beside the point. It's not the telecommunications companies that are acting in bad faith. It's the president. I mean, if the president in good faith asks the telecommunications companies to spy on Martin Luther King and they do so, are they acting in bad faith? No. No, they're just doing what the president says. If the president tells them to spy on me and they do, how are they to know I'm just an ordinary American citizen who is not fond of my government? They don't. This is not a case of telecommunications companies going haywire and spying on everyone because they get their jollies off of it. This is a case of the administration asking the telecommunications companies to spy on people who shouldn't be spied on. So them acting in good faith doesn't matter. Anyway, they also told me that Jim Webb supported the House bill. Now, to recall, the House bill passed in November before there was a deadline. The Restore Act. This act does protect civil liberties, does require protections of civil liberties, courts, and so forth. This is the bill that Jim Webb says he supports. But that bill never came up in the Senate. That's largely, by the way, the fault of Harry Reid and Senator Rockefeller, the head of the Intelligence Committee in the Senate, Senator Rockefeller of West Virginia. There was, by the way, the Senate Judiciary Committee also passed the bill, the same bill pretty much as the House bill, that, and Senator Reid didn't decide to use that one. So Reid is definitely a bad guy here. And Rockefeller is definitely a bad guy here. But I have no power over Reid or Rockefeller. I am not a resident of Nevada or West Virginia. But I was mad at my Senator Jim Webb. I wanted to know why it was that he said he was against this bill, but then he voted for it. This fighting hero, this ex-Navy secretary whose son was on the ground in Iraq and came out early against Iraq, why was he such a coward, and yes, I use that word, a coward, before the President of the United States? Why was he such a coward hiding from me, a simple constituent wanting answers? Why is he stonewalling and refusing to say why he cravenly did what Bush asked him to do? And what Dana Perino, that wonderful spokesman for the president, keeps saying when she says 68 senators, bipartisan, voted for this bill. The amazing thing is I just heard Arlen Specter recently, the ranking Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he doesn't support retroactive immunity either. But he voted for the bill. Okay, that's understandable. He's a Republican. He falls in line when the president asks him to. But Jim Webb? Why was he falling in line? I'll be happy to tell you the punchline to this terrible story after the break, but I also want to encourage you to call in on this or any topic. Do not hesitate. We've got lots of time. This wasn't my planned topic for this evening, and I want to hear from you. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Let me know what's on your mind, and I'll give you the conclusion to my fight with my senator right after this.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The United States could be facing a West Coast ports shutdown on May 1st as longshore workers protest the war in Iraq. Jesse Russell reports.
The International Longshore and Warehouse Union recently sent a letter to AFL-CIO President John Sweeney announcing that West Coast port workers would be walking off the job on May 1st to demand a withdrawal of troops from Iraq. The letter from ILWU President Robert McElrath says that during a two-week caucus, members adopted a resolution that called for longshore workers to stop work during the day shift on May 1st, 2008, to express their opposition to the war in Iraq. McElrath asked Sweeney in the letter if other AFL-CIO affiliates would be participating in similar events on May 1st, also known worldwide as International Workers' Day, to honor labor history and express support for the troops by bringing them home safely. The letter was sent on February 22nd.
AFSCME President Gerald McEntee says he'll continue to push for an AFL-CIO endorsement of Senator Hillary Clinton for president in the wake of her big wins in Ohio and Texas. He says about 52% of the Federation's unions now back Clinton, but a two-thirds majority is needed.
That's very difficult. You know, it's like pushing a rock up the side of a mountain.
Despite denials from the Obama campaign and from Canadian officials, McEntee says there's still serious concern in the labor movement over whether Obama's economic advisor said one thing in private to Canadian officials about NAFTA, while Obama's campaign may have been saying something different to voters.
Did the guy say it? Didn't he say it? Does Barack Obama say something in public and something else in private? I mean, we've got in some way to get to the bottom of that and really understand it, because it will continue to be significant in Pennsylvania.
Six National Education Association chapters of the California Teachers Association are directly affiliating now with the AFL-CIO. It's part of a groundbreaking pact between the AFL-CIO and the independent NEA that allows local chapters of the NEA to directly affiliate with the AFL-CIO. Over 10,000 NEA members are in the AFL-CIO as a result. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
If you are heading toward retirement, as we all are, someday, here is some sobering news. A couple retiring this year should have $225,000 in savings set aside to cover medical costs. That is according to Fidelity Investments, who released a study on Wednesday. And Fidelity isn't the only one with such a projection. According to a study by the Center for Retirement Research, an individual retiring should have $102,000 set aside just for health care in retirement.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm talking about the FISA immunity law, but I want to encourage you to call in and talk about anything on your mind. It's open mic. My original guest didn't show, so I do have some time, and I want to encourage you to take it to talk about this or any other issue. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Anyway, as you probably know by now, the Republicans are complaining that we're about to undergo another attack because a bill to protect America's security was allowed to expire. I want to make sure, though, you know the details of it. And I've talked about this before, but it's very important because it's the kind of thing that's getting a lot of press these days. And then I'll get back to my fight with my Senator Jim Webb. After FISA existed for 20-something years, and Bush didn't like the fact that 99.98% was not good enough for him. He needed, I guess, 120%. He wanted to spy on all the people that was ever submitted a warrant to FISA and some people that he couldn't legally spy on. He just started spying on people, and that went on for many years. The New York Times discovered it, didn't report on it. They, Quisling New York Times, sat on it for a year until finally it was reported that they might report on it, and they didn't want some other place to get the scoop. So they finally told us that George Bush was preparing East German-like files, that he was indeed spying on people outside of FISA. And the FISA court got wind of it, and they were unhappy too. So what happened is George Bush got upset, and the fact that a court told him he didn't have unlimited dictatorial power certainly didn't make him happy. And so he asked Congress for emergency legislation to allow him to keep doing what he was doing, or at least to do what he was doing, and to have really no protection whatsoever. And Congress gave good news and bad news. And the bad news was is they gave the president this right. And I remember complaining about it right here on the horn when they did it. They caved in and said, all right, you've scared us. You said terrorists are going to attack if we don't give you this act called the Protect America Act. But the good news is we're going to let it expire in 6 months because we know this is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. We know this is a civil liberties problem, and we're going to pass something better in the meantime. So they decided to violate the Constitution, but only for 6 months. Thank you, Congress. And that is good news. I mean, better a six-month unconstitutional violation than a permanent one, right? So, of course, we have November 07. The House passes the Restore Act, the act that allows you to go and I'm trying to get the acronym right. Let me find that out for you. But it's an act that allows you to check on terrorists, but at the same time does so in a way that protects civil liberties. Here it is. Responsible surveillance that is overseen, reviewed, and effective. Act. Aren't acronyms wonderful? Responsible surveillance that is overseen, reviewed, and effective act. And they passed it in November of this year. Webb says he supported it. The Senate Judiciary Committee was ready to put that one forward. And Reid, who's supposed to be a majority leader for the Democrats, a majority of Democrats supported this bill, including some Republicans, people like Arlen Specter. Reid didn't put it on the floor. No, Reid put the president's version on the floor, and he did so in a way that made it virtually impossible to change, with 60 amendments to change it. And then he voted the right way, as if to say, oh, well, I did the right thing, oh, what's your problem? The problem is that Senator Reid, and maybe because he gets telecommunications contributions, I don't know the reason, or maybe he's just too good friends with Senator Rockefeller, but for whatever reason, he took Rockefeller's version rather than the version that the majority of Democrats support. And I think what we have here is a problem with the kinds of people who go on intelligence committees. If you look at the Democrat, I can't help what the Republicans do. It's not my party. You know, most of them just do wrong, and I have to try to vote them out. But for my party, when the Democrats put people on intelligence committees, they don't put Ronald Dellums anymore. Remember Ronald Dellums, very strongly anti-war congressman from California, and he eventually became head of the Armed Services Committee, and it was beautiful. No, we don't do that anymore. We put on the intelligence committees our most hawkish Democrats. And I don't think that's right. I think we need to put in our intelligence committees people who represent a cross-section of the party. You may remember that Senator Rockefeller was told about this warrantless wiretapping. And what did he do? He wrote a handwritten letter to George Bush and said, "Please, sir, stop it. Please, please stop abusing us." Didn't tell his staff. Didn't tell the press. The president warned him if he told anybody, you know, he would be prosecuted criminally. But sometimes I think when you're a senator of the United States, you have to rise above it. I think when you're a senator of the United States, you have to say this. You have to say, "Ladies and gentlemen, CNN, give me a speech. The president of the United States is doing an unconstitutional program. He is violating the rights of innocent, millions of innocent Americans. He has told me I will be criminally sanctioned if I tell you what it is. So I won't tell you what it is. I can't tell you. All I will tell you is the president is breaking the Constitution, breaking the law that affects hundreds of thousands of innocent Americans, and I beg the president to let me tell you what it is, because some of you may want to impeach him for it. But I can't tell you what it is. He said he'd put me in jail. So I won't. I'll respect that. But Mr. President, I think you need to stop this and stop it now." And then let them ask the president what to do. Yeah, we don't have people on the Intelligence Committee with that kind of courage. No, no, we sure don't. And look, I understand the need to fight terrorists, okay? I get it. I get it. Yes, please don't give me the George Bush line. Well, some people just don't understand that there are terrorists out there trying to kill us. Yes, there are terrorists out there trying to kill us. I get it. It's true. It's true. I'm not a 9/11 conspiracist. But I also believe that the techniques we have and the Constitution we have are sufficient to protect us. We've survived much worse than this. We've survived civil war. We've survived the War of 1812, where the British burned down the White House. We've survived far more gruesome wars and terrible things. Because the Constitution does allow us to spy on people. It just requires a warrant. It just requires a reason. Probable cause is the lowest of standards in the law. It's very low. You just have to have reasonable suspicion. Some reason to suspect that someone may have done a crime. It ain't that much, my friends. But we have on these intelligence committees Democrats who want to show how tough they are, because the intelligence committees find out all this classified information and they undergo security clearances. And so Rockefeller is not the only one. In the House, we have Sylvester Reyes. Now, it's interesting. The woman who originally was head of the intelligence committee is Jane Harman. And I had some problems with her as well, but I think she was better than Sylvester Reyes. But she had her own, let's just call it a personality conflict with Nancy Pelosi, and Pelosi was not going to allow Jane Harman to be there. And I agree that number two shouldn't have been there. That was Alcee Hastings. He's a judge that was impeached and convicted and thrown out of office. Whatever you think of Alcee Hastings' politics, it doesn't really, not a good idea to have a head of our Intelligence Committee be an impeached and convicted judge. So we're left with Sylvester Reyes. Sylvester Reyes, who said, quote, that about this telecom immunity bill, "We've got the wrong target," Sylvester Reyes says. "The issue is how to craft legislation that only protects companies that acted lawfully." Congressman Reyes, companies that acted lawfully are already protected under the law. Because if they didn't act illegally, they're not in danger. Doesn't that make sense? If companies followed the law, if they got a warrant, I'm okay with legislation. All right, here's my legislation. You ready? You're worried about telecommunications immunity? It's very simple. If a telecommunications company has a warrant that you can prove was duly signed by a judge, you know, it wasn't a fraudulent, it wasn't a, you know, a forged warrant, okay? All you have to prove, telecommunications company, is when you're sued, is that you have in your hand, or electronically, a warrant issued by a lawful judge of the United States, and I'm willing to dismiss every lawsuit against you. You want an easy way to give telecommunications companies immunity for acting lawfully? I got the solution, Congressman Reyes. I got the solution, George Bush. It's very simple. Show the companies a warrant, and companies spy to your little heart's content. If Lyndon Johnson or Nixon could get a warrant against Dr. King, well, then it's fine. You know, an independent judge does the wrong thing, at least it can be overturned eventually by a higher court. Not that I trust the Supreme Court right now. But you got independent eyes looking at this thing. You have courts, and they're not all controlled by George Bush. And that's not good enough for Reyes. And it's not good enough for Rockefeller. And it's not good enough for Jim Webb. I mean, all that is the Constitution. And we all know that none of these men respect the Bill of Rights. But it is good enough for the majority of Democrats, who are thus far standing firm. Thus far, the Democrats aren't caving. Thus far, House Democrats are not passing this bill to give the president retroactive amnesty for the laws he broke in the past and prospective amnesty for all the laws he would break in the future. Other than that, the bill's okay. So what happened? The Democrats said, all right, tell you what, Mr. President, we'll extend this Protect America Act, this pretty awful extension that gives the president virtual right to spy on anybody, goes beyond FISA, but doesn't give this retroactive immunity and doesn't give this prospective immunity. We don't like the bill, but we'll extend it just while we work on a bill that comes around and protects civil liberties. And the president said no. And here's the part that's most important. Here's the part that the Republicans are not telling you. The day before the Democrats let this act expire, they voted to extend the act. And the Republicans filibustered. And in the House, the Republicans voted no, joined with some courageous Democrats who voted no because they didn't like the bill to begin with. Bush threatened to veto it. So George Bush took the very same bill, except for the immunity part, the bill that supposedly protects us against terrorists, and he said, you know what, I care more about covering up the illegal acts my administration did. I care more about protecting telecommunications giants from, what, 40 lawsuits? Than I do about protecting the American people. And now they're going on. You see the rhetoric. Oh, American people, we're in trouble. We're in trouble. The Democrats let this bill expire. No, they didn't. The president let this bill expire. Let's be very, very clear. And I think that's why it's not resonating with the American people, except to the extent that people are tricked stupidly into not knowing all the facts. And by the way, if any of this is unclear, I do want to give you one more chance to call in. If I'm not making myself clear in any way, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366 if you have a question about this. But so far, the House is standing firm. As Nancy Pelosi put it, if we give him this exclusivity part, this prospective amnesty for all future presidents in the future, future presidents in the future, that's redundant, for all future presidents, if we do that, then we might as well just pack up and go home. What good is Congress? What good is the Constitution at that point? But let me take you back to Jim Webb. Jim Webb writes me this letter, well, not him, a staffer, saying what he said, saying that, you know, he wants to do it the right way, he wants to do it the House way, he wants to protect civil liberties, but oh no, he couldn't do it. Because he's, of all his experience in the Navy and intelligence, he knew that he had to give the president the things that he said the president shouldn't have. He had to pardon the president for his past lawbreaking, unconstitutional lawbreaking. We had to take these impeachable offenses and say, Mr. President, you get a pass, and we won't even ask you what you did. And we have to say in the future, you can do whatever you want. How, Bush? And even though Webb was against both of these, he voted for the bill because, well, we need these updated tools. And to this day, he refuses to tell me what those updated tools are. Now, I actually know some of them. Here's the secret. Shh, don't tell Senator Webb. I know some of those tools. They're things like blanket warrants, things like allowing data mining, allowing them to go through billions of phone calls and supposedly magically find the terrorists by looking for keywords. Do we really think the terrorists are going to say, let's bomb the World Trade Center? Oops, I think I'm being spied on right now. I just don't think they're that stupid. And the ones that are, well, probably are connected to someone we can find out anyway. Look, if the idea is reasonable, go to a court, get a warrant. Go to Congress, get a bill. Just don't make it blanket. Don't say that the president gets blanket immunity in the past and the future. I'm curious if any of you have had experience calling into your member of Congress, trying to convince your senator or your representative to do what you wanted them to do, and whether you've gotten this kind of stonewalling that I have. There's still some time left. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I know that in my case, I sometimes get more information from people who aren't even my senators. I recently did a story that I'm shopping around, and some of you may have heard it, on the alliance between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists. Very few people know about the alliance, so the fact that the FBI covered up the entire thing. It's a very interesting story, and I urge you to go to my website to listen to it. I may do a repeat of it here. But in doing so, I had to talk to Senator Grassley's staff. Now, he's a Republican, and he's from Iowa. And yet his staff gave me a lot more time and attention than my Democratic senator from my home state. And that's shameful. That's shameful. Webb could have said, Mark, I disagree with you. Let me tell you why. I think that these particular updated set of tools allow us to do this, that, and the other, that weighs more than giving the president a pardon for his lawlessness. Could have said that. I disagree, but he could have said it. Heck, he could have said, you know what, we're not going to talk with you anymore. We don't like the fact that you're telling the topic, you're talking about our conversations with the wider public. We don't think a senator should be held accountable to the public. Bad, bad thing to say, but hey, at least it's something, right? No, they didn't say either of those things. Let me take a quick break, give you a chance to call in. I'd like to hear from any of you if you can tell me your experiences calling into Congress, trying to get them to do what you want. And we'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. A couple weeks back, I got a nervous phone call from Dennis Kucinich, who was very worried about his opponents in the primary contest for his seat in Congress. They were taking a lot of cheap shots at him for being a perennial presidential candidate and for not adhering to the business of his district, allegedly. Kucinich isn't a congressman, he's a showman, said his main rival, Cleveland City Council member Joe Simperman. Yet Kucinich prevailed to the relief of many progressives who've relied on Dennis Kucinich for his courageous stands against NAFTA, against corporate giveaways, against the Iraq War, against the Iran War. They've admired his visionary pleas to rid the world of nuclear weapons and to establish a Department of Peace. And they really appreciate his effort to impeach Cheney and Bush for their multiple crimes against our Constitution. They sensed it would have been a terrible loss to the whole whole progressive movement if Kucinich had been defeated in the primary. And they know he can represent his constituents in Cleveland, even as he represents the hopes of millions of progressives around the country who want peace and democracy. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I was hoping to get one of you to call in and tell me about your experiences with Congress. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. But none of you did, so I want to tell you about what I did yesterday. Yesterday, I trudged down to the Senate Judiciary Committee myself. There was a hearing, and Director Robert Mueller, the director of the FBI, was appearing before Senators Leahy and Hatch, and who else was there? Arlen Specter, Senator Grassley, Senator Feinstein, Schumer, White House, Kennedy, Feingold. I may have left a couple out. Cole, Kyle. But he was talking about all the ways that the FBI is messing up. One of the main ways is that they're not going through the numbers of people that are trying to become citizens. They're supposed to do background checks, and so they're backed up. And Republicans were insisting they not go too fast because, there's some terrorists would slip through, which is a fair point. And Democrats were saying don't go too slow because these people want to become citizens so they can vote in 2008. Also a very fair point. And the FBI director was saying, well, you didn't give us enough money to do this. Another fair point. I actually think they were all being pretty fair on this point. But what it shows is that how our government is starved for money, right? When we put all this money into Iraq, we don't have the money needed to do background checks on people at home. I mean, when George Bush says we're fighting over there so we don't have to fight over here, at the same time, he's starving organizations like the FBI for the money they need to do background checks on terrorists who may already be here. In effect, we are fighting them over there and therefore making it worse for us over here. And I just thought this was an interesting classic example of how it is that the president was exactly wrong on that subject. Another thing that came before the director of the FBI, on which the president is exactly wrong, is the issue of torture. The FBI has long avoided torture. They have a practice of building a rapport with their suspects. In fact, recently an FBI agent did it with Saddam Hussein, built a rapport, found all kinds of information out from Saddam Hussein, and then Hussein was executed anyway. Didn't affect his execution. But you know the old saying, you win more flies with honey than with a stick. I think it's with a stick. In any case, you do catch more flies with honey. And you do. If you are nice to people or even trick them, you can find out all kinds of information. When, however, we waterboarded people, even very nasty, evil terrorists, even terrible terrorists like Abu Zubaydah, okay, and I don't dispute that he's a terrorist, we waterboarded him, and the information we got from that point on was unreliable. And that's what the studies show. And here's what's so interesting. You can argue that we shouldn't torture people because it's against human rights. It's against human dignity. It's against the Constitution of the United States, the Eighth Amendment. It's against the very concept of who we are as Americans, of who we are as human beings, that we don't torture people because we don't want to be tortured ourselves. It's the classic golden rule, that we don't torture ourselves because we don't want to lower ourselves to the standards of our enemies. Those are all very good reasons not to torture. But throw them all aside for the second. Those are all liberal reasons, caring about humanity and believing in human rights and all that stuff. Let me make a conservative argument. Torture harms us in the war on terror. That's right. Torture harms us. Torture gives us false information. People will say or do anything so that they're not tortured. They will do anything to make it stop. They will tell the interrogator what the interrogator wants to hear. If you don't give a damn about humanity, and you have no concern about people torturing our troops, and you don't think the Constitution binds our government at all, just consider that fact. Torture harms us in fighting terrorists because it gets lies rather than truth out of the terrorist. If you want to punish a terrorist, there's solitary confinement. You know, that's okay with me. I don't mind that. We can do things like that. But waterboarding, drowning, Spanish Inquisition tactics. I saw Director Mueller up there, and I've got real problems with Director Mueller. In fact, I think he's covering up his own illegal actions in the FBI. As many of you know, I've done a story about this, and this isn't the time or place to do that story. It's coming up. I hope to get it published soon. But he was right on the issue of torture when he pointed out that the FBI has not found the effectiveness of their interrogation to gone down at any part because they don't use torture. And the FBI, when asked to participate in acts that they considered to be torture, left and refused to participate. So our FBI doesn't torture, and our Army doesn't torture, and our CIA still does. And our Republican nominee for president, who was tortured himself, seems to want to protect the CIA's right to do that, at least by his vote on recent legislation. And that is among the many reasons why we need to vote for a Democrat for president of the United States. I know that Obama and Clinton, well, it's kind of like mommy and daddy fighting. We like them both. We want it all to end. We want a nominee. We'll get one. And whoever he or she is will be a far better president than John McCain. That's all for the Inside Scoop. Tune in next week. I'm going to talk about NAFTA 2.0. Do you know about the North American Competitiveness Council? You will after next week. Also, the trial of Don Siegelman. Also, all coming up next week. This is Mark Levine signing off. Under federal law, because my bill said very simply that a civil union shall be treated as a marriage for purposes of federal law. See, federal law, it's a weird mixture, marriage, because federal law gives you all these benefits if you're married, Social Security and rights and all kinds of things. Ding, ding. And so it gives you all those rights, and but what it does is it bases it on the state definition of marriage. So in other words, the federal government doesn't define marriage, the states do. But whether you get a right under federal law depends on whether you're married under state law. Which is why I think that it would be illegal for them to refuse Massachusetts couples. And we can get to that. But in any case, this was before Massachusetts. And yeah. So I wrote the first law in the country, the bill, that would give full and equal rights, state and federal, to gay couples. I was very proud of it at the time. We were leading protests. We would go into marriage licensing bureaus and line up all these gay couples and have them be refused and bring the cameras out on Valentine's Day. It was a fun little thing we did. Marriage Equality California is what we called it. It's grown some. But I'm getting off topic. The point of my what I'm saying here and how this all relates back to Not Invented Here is I helped elect, because I know that it's not just a matter of convincing a politician to do the right thing. If you're with that politician from the beginning, you have a lot better chance of getting something done. So I helped elect an assemblyman by the name of Paul Koretz in the district in California that includes West Hollywood, which is the first majority gay city in the country. San Francisco is about a third gay. West Hollywood is the majority.
Hollywood place. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's separated from the unincorporated parts of Los Angeles County to be a majority gay city. And Paul Koretz represented West Hollywood, and he is a straight man, but a very, very good believer in full and equal rights for everyone, including gay people. And I helped Paul Koretz get elected. I helped him in the primary against the fellow Democrat. I helped him in the general. I sat next to him as we called people and got him to the polls. He was a big fan of mine. I'm a big fan of his. And he agreed to introduce my civil unions bill. And I guess I should give credit to the co-author, Jim Toledano. It wasn't just mine. He and I wrote the bill together. So we have this bill. Just two gay lawyers in Los Angeles write a bill. Now, you know, we're pretty sophisticated lawyers. And Paul Caret introduces it. And you can go back and look on the record, and you will see our civil unions bill was introduced in California. But
I had no idea.
There's something we did wrong. Something we did wrong. We didn't inform the Lambda Legal Defense Fund. The Lambda Legal Defense Fund is the gay legal civil rights group. They are patterned after the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, that great organization run by Thurgood Marshall that brought us Brown versus Board of Education. And the Lambda Legal Defense Fund, generally, at least so I had supposed up to that point, did good things. They helped gay rights. They are the ones who were brought in Lawrence v. Texas and Browers v. Hardwick and all these Supreme Court decisions that are virulently anti-gay. Well,
yes,
Lambda,
they were given a large gift too by the Microsoft employee who passed away.
I'm sure they were, and that will make them very happy, because what Lambda cares about more than anything else, more than gay rights, is money. And how do I know this? Very simple. Lambda insisted to Paul Caretz that he withdraw the bill that I and Jim Toledano wrote and substitute it with their own. Their bill, which instead of giving gay people the 1,600 equal rights of marriage that straight people got, gave them 8 domestic partner benefits. Visitation, hospital, a few other things. 8.
Yes.
Not 1,600, not a tenth of 1,600, not 1% of 1,600, but half of 1% of 1,600. 8 rights. And Lambda said, we don't think we can get full equality, so we want you to withdraw the bill. At which point Paul Caret said, quite rightly, look, why don't we try Mark's bill? This Mark Levine, Jim Toledano's bill, we'll try to get full equality. If we meet resistance in the legislature, then I'm sure we can then water it down and get as much as we can. Because Paul Caret, like me, is a realist. He understands that you can't always get everything you want, and better to get half a loaf than no loaf. I'm all for that. I understood that. So did Paul. And Lambda said no. They said no. You must start with our bill only. Because the other one is
like
too far-reaching.
Sounds like the transgender protections.
Well, no, it had nothing to do with transgender protections.
That happened recently when the transgender protections were pulled from. Right. It sounds similar to this story.
Well, it's actually worse than that, because Lambda was insisting on their bill, and Paul Caret finally turned to me. He red in the face, very upset, but he said, "Look, Mark, you know, I represent West Hollywood. This is an organization that makes millions of dollars. They spend millions of dollars on candidates. I need their endorsement. It's the wrong thing to do, but I'm going to withdraw your bill and put in theirs," which became law, and they gay people got eight benefits.
8 rights.
After that bill passed, Peter, I got in the mail a fundraising letter from Lambda, talking about the first domestic partnership bill in California, how they gave these 8 wonderful rights, and they were good things, hospital visitation, other things. They were useful things. They weren't all of them. They weren't even. And asking for money to support them in the fight for gay equality.
My God, how many times are we going to be used to raise money for the fundamentalist right? And now from Lambda Legal, Mark, I'm horrified at this story. I had no idea.
I determined that in that day I would never give a penny to the Lambda Legal Defense Fund again. And I tell this story not to pick on gay civil rights organizations. Obviously not. I support gay civil rights. I do think that many of the people who work for these organizations do have terrific motivations. They give up high-paying jobs to help people. My point is this, that there comes a time when even progressive organizations, just like Take Back America, which I talked about in the last hour, when they stop caring about their goals and they start caring about money. And there are too many progressive organizations across the country that are a huge fundraising machine. And they make millions of dollars. I won't name them, but you know what they are. The people, they put up some good content perhaps on their blogs, and they make millions of dollars. When we've got, I got to go back to the horn, you and me and Bob Kincaid and John Fox and all of us and Guy James struggling to get the word out on a much more expensive operation than posting a website, which is a lot cheaper.
Yeah,
you know, you've got the,
exactly.
You got the calls,
yeah,
and the computers and the telephone system.
Long,
and we get live content every day, and we're struggling just to get a few bucks to stay on the air. And these organizations, I fear that too many organizations begin as a good idea. MoveOn.org began as a good idea, but I feared that at the end of the day, they're much more about sustaining MoveOn.org than they are for their causes. Now, if I'm wrong, you know, MoveOn.org, give me a call, come on the air, and heck, you know, the horn could use $1 million, MoveOn, because you've got it. But they're the ones that are they're spending, you know, $800,000 on a 30-second ad. To me, the story of Lambda Legal Defense Fund, the reason I tell this story on the air,
yes,
is, one, I think it's the not-invented-here syndrome. The idea that it wasn't their idea, they can't take credit for it, they can't fundraise for it, they have to destroy it, even though they'd have to admit that my bill was better than theirs. Mine was 100%, theirs was half of 1%. But also for people to be wary where they give their money, that they're giving it to a progressive organization that is actually giving out more than they take in. And I would ask any of you, when you donate to progressive organizations, ask them how much money, and they're required to tell you by law, how much they spend on fundraising versus how much they actually spend on progressive causes. I'm not telling you not to give at all. There's lots of good places to give. So I'll give one more pitch for the horn, but there are many other good places to give. The main thing is to make sure that they're not spending all their money on fundraising. And I'm finally done, Peter. I want to hear what you think of my story.
Well, first of all, I am very disturbed to hear this about Lambda Legal. I had always held them in the highest esteem, not realizing they too had succumbed to the beast of money. We've recently seen this similar behavior of blocking things from the HRC with their endorsement. That's what's his name, Solemnes. What's his name? Step down. Right. Yeah. He was under much controversy, and now that he is out of the organization, he seems to be voicing, he seems to be speaking up, and in some ways not so complimentary about HRC. One wonders about all the details of him being
discharged. Well, I can tell you details about HRC.
Well, I would love to know them. There's a lot of stuff flying and hitting the fan.
Well, I'll tell you. Listen, you know, I used to work for Barney Frank. I was the gay rights guy on the Hill. I mean, you know, he is the premier gay congressman, and I handled all his gay rights stuff. So I saw a lot of stuff from the inside. And the Human Rights Campaign, I'm afraid, is often acting a lot like Lambda. And by the way, I don't think it's this, I don't mean to pick on gay rights organizations. I know that there are environmental organizations. There's all kinds of organizations out there that are care more about their self-preservation than they do about doing good for their cause. But HRC would do things, for example, like support moderate Republicans. And they would do so they could argue they were a bipartisan organization, and they'd support people like Congresswoman Connie Morella of Maryland, or you know, Senator Chafee of Rhode Island, moderate Republicans. But here's the problem with moderate Republicans. Senator Chafee of Rhode Island, and he was a moderate, he was even a liberal, what he would do is he would vote for the Republicans to run the Senate. That's the one vote he cast that mattered, and that would be enough to give Dick Cheney the tying vote. It is only because we replaced Chafee with a very good senator, Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, that we are able to control the Senate. Now, admittedly, I got my problems with Harry Reid, but at least it's better than having Mitch McConnell in charge. And HRC would never make that argument. They would never seem to – they would understand it, but they wouldn't let people know that they – should really just support Democrats, because even if they support a liberal Republican, they gave Republicans control over Congress. And, you know, with that control comes the fact that you can't have oversight committees. You can't have, you know, committees
exactly
overseeing, subpoenaing whether white emails are law, White House emails are law.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so, but HRC started caring more about self-preservation, and I think with all these organizations, they have to be careful. I understand what they're saying. They have to stay alive. I mean, you know, the horn has to ask for money, too. I hate asking for money. I don't ask for money anywhere on my website. I may have to finally, after 5 years, break down and put a donate page. I've avoided it for 5 years because I didn't want to. I've just been spending what I earned as a trial lawyer. But I understand that organizations have to sustain themselves. I get that. But at the end of the day, you have to be true to your principles. And one of the things that amazes me about what Scott from Sweden was saying 2 hours ago was that in Sweden, people look out for each other, and that's supposed to be a progressive value. And the sad thing to me is I see progressives taking on this conservative, individualistic, I'm all in it for myself type values that we decry against, even amongst ourselves.
Well, Mark, I have to say that I agree with you, and it is very disturbing, and one wonders how deep these things go. And I understand about self-perpetuating and that they need to exist, but I've always been very disturbed when any of the major organizations lift up a Republican in any way. You make a good point about the no committees to investigate, and your take on HRC, there's no doubt lots of dirt about that. In fact, the HRC actually went against, what was it, over 350 LGBT organizations who were screaming not to remove transgendered rights from the employment, the ENDA bill. And over 350.
I'll tell you what, we have to take a break soon, Peter, but if you want to talk about that with me, that may be one of the few things that actually I support. So we might have a good debate, you and me, on that issue. So tell you what, we got to take a break, but when we come back, Peter, let's discuss that specific issue, because I do understand the practicality in politics that sometimes you do have to compromise. What made me mad about Lambda was that at the very beginning they were negotiating against themselves. But tell you what, hang on, Peter. Let me also make sure our listeners have a chance to call in as well. Join in the discussion anywhere you want to go. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Let's try to get this straight now. The Kurds in Iraq are supposed to be the one group that supports the U.S. occupation, and yet U.S. ally Turkey is now invading the Kurds in northern Iraq. Turkey's been bombing there for a couple weeks now, and last week it sent 10,000 troops over Iraq's border to go after members of the Kurdish Workers' Party. This is an illegal invasion of a sovereign country, which the U.S. is supposed to be protecting, but the Bush administration gave the Turks the green light for this offensive. Bush knows something about illegal invasions, so who is he to oppose this one? But if he thinks this will help keep Iraq together, he's got another thing coming. The Iraqi government, not surprisingly, has condemned the invasion, and even Kurds who aren't members of the PKK are outraged at the Turkish incursion. It's not unreasonable to suspect that many, if not most, Kurds will now turn against the U.S. occupation. And if that happens, the U.S. military will be exposed on all fronts, and it'll take more than a surge and more than a pause to control the chaos that Bush has wrought. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, it was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL, whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying, or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, one in five children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the Week in Review. All topics are valid. Feel free to give a call. By the way, if you saw the Clinton-Obama debate last night, I'd love to know your perspective.